Welcome to another edition of Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer for this series, Andrew Patner. A couple of weeks ago, we had Cliff Colnott, conductor, arranger, composer, teacher extraordinaire, into the studios here for a program. And by the time we laid down all the music and so on, we'd run out of time. So we thought we would listen to the rest of that conversation with Cliff. He talks here about his philosophy of conducting, particularly working with student orchestras, such young ensembles that he leads as the DePaul Symphony Orchestra, which he led in a terrific concert May 30th at Orchestra Hall, particularly the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra, which we will hear played by the other younger orchestra he conducts, the Civic Orchestra of Chicago. First, a little curtain raiser, the last parts of William Schumann's arrangement of Charles Ives's Variations on America, Cliff Colnott, the Civic Orchestra of Chicago, 05-06. Resuming the conversation with Cliff Colnott, Person with Curiosity. I think we'll use that title. We'll remind you of a couple of the mantras of this program. One, the great Studs Terkel, turned 95 in the month of May, has said that for his epitaph, which we hope he won't need for another 95 years, he wants it to say, "Curiosity did not kill this cat." And then a quotation I came across from Suzanne Guess at the Renaissance Society at the University of Chicago, great Kunsthalle down there. She thought it was Dorothy Parker, but I can't find that that's the case. But the quote is, "The only cure for boredom is curiosity. There is no cure for curiosity." So we're very happy that Cliff remains infected for life. All of these things we've been talking about would have a lot to do with how you might work, as we talked about with a young conductor, how you might work with a fellow composer or other composer, how you might work with preparation for new music. But another hat that you wear, or even set of hats, because you don't do anything one hat at a time, I don't think, is leading the DePaul Symphony Orchestra, which is the student orchestra. Only graduates? Graduates and undergraduates?
Graduates and undergraduates.
Okay. Graduate and undergraduate students from this very important Chicago-based institution of higher education and professional studies. And when you put a concert together with the full orchestra, it's not a new music concert. I don't even know if necessarily we'll have from program to program any work of quote-unquote new music. How do you put together a program with them and why? And what is it that you want to get across to them playing these pieces? You've given us an idea of what the conductor has to incorporate and communicate, but what is it that you're imparting to them or working on with them?
My approach to the symphony orchestra is again one that has changed over the years and radically changed after the privilege I had of working with Mr. Barenboim. And his point of view is one that I have taken and adapted, which is that the orchestra is basically chamber music with a lot more people. And so that's my modus operandi. It's basically I've done a lot of coaching of chamber music over the years, and basically I approach the orchestra experience this in the same way that I would approach the coaching of the Ravel string quartet or any piano trio or canon of the chamber music repertoire. So basically, what we would do in a string quartet rehearsal is what I do in the orchestra rehearsal in terms of uniformity, of stroke, sound, the beginning, the middle, the end of the sound, all the details around the balance and the sound and the harmonic tension and release. And most important is to give ownership to the members of the orchestra around the process of preparing the music, not dissimilar to what would happen in a healthy string quartet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's in a nutshell the modus operandi.
It's a nutshell with a lot of kernels in it, because these are all extremely important things, and each of them is too often neglected, I think, by others. And when I say by others, I don't mean that there are not some wonderful conductors and talents out there, but some of them focus on two or three of those things.
Certainly, just to be clear, there are numerous completely viable ways by which the cat can be skinned in terms of the orchestra experience. I don't want to suggest that anyone who does not approach it this way is somehow giving short shrift to the students or to the orchestra, or that their concerts are not. I mean, that's not my point. This is just a point of view that I have. There are other points of view that
of
are
course.
Equally
But even
powerful.
Within that, though, there are certain things that have to be understood by somebody before he can modify them, accept them, reject them. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned a few times tension and release.
Right.
Just that is something. There are a lot of people, audience members, players, and some unnamed conductors who think it's only tension or only release. And you may make all kinds of choices based on mood, repertoire, the day, style about tension and release, but you have to know that they're related and that they're connected so that you can make those
Absolutely.
Choices.
Absolutely.
I was thinking during Maestro Pollini's recital, and I use that word advisedly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a maestro. Mm-hmm. Whether he's standing in front of an orchestra is irrelevant. Although he's conducting this new release, I haven't heard it yet, of Mozart piano concertos, where the young-ish Italian composer Salvatore Chiarino has written cadenzas to those concertos that Mozart did not write cadenzas.
Mm-hmm.
And Pollini is playing those and leading the Vienna Phil. And I'm very curious to hear that.
I bet it'll be great.
I think you're right. One of the things I noticed during his recent recital at Orchestra Hall was
an ability to anticipate and create a feeling of suspense in what he's playing, so that even though he's also got, I had the privilege of interviewing Leon Fleischer the other day, that something Fleischer says we have to strive for, inevitability, but you have to have both, especially if you're playing a quote-unquote classic work. Yes, people know how it ends, but they should feel as if they don't know how it's going to end, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that's got to come from tension and release and focus on harmony, focus on audibility.
Absolutely.
And by, to use these current terms, empowering the players and reminding them they have ownership. I was talking with some members of an orchestra recently, and one of them was telling me that another one said to him, "Don't act as if it's chamber music." And this other person said, "Oh?"
Really? Interesting.
And so these issues are not commonly understood or easily accepted.
And what was the person's point of view who said, "Don't treat this as chamber music"? How would he or she like to treat it?
Look at the conductor and look at the principal in your section.
Well, half of that is belies the remark, because looking at the principal is, in fact, one...
But the principal in your own section.
Oh, yeah.
Not the principals in the other section.
Oh, I see. Well, that's interesting. That's another point of view.
It's another point of view. That's a very good way to put it.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the program for the 2007 DePaul concert and how you put it together, because I imagine one of the things, too, is you want the players to have experience with different shapes and styles within the canon.
Similar to the way the repertoire at Civic is chosen, there's a very strong emphasis on doing works from the canon, even though within the canon, of course, there's a wide range, but to not spend a lot of the time in rehearsal working on repertoire that will not ultimately serve the paraprofessionals' best interests in their career, because they need to learn how to play Mahler and Ravel and Wagner and Brahms and Mozart and Haydn as first. At least that's my value. And so the repertoire is chosen around or motivated by that value in the same way it is at DePaul. In the Orchestra Hall concert, we traditionally have a faculty person as a soloist. And this year we have Steve Balderston, who is the chair of the string department, professor of cello at DePaul, playing the Tchaikovsky Rococo variations.
And former assistant principal cello of the CSO and a wonderful musician.
Absolutely top notch. And then we're going to start with the Romeo and Juliet Overture Fantasy, which is a deceivingly difficult piece to do in the way that we've been chatting thus far. It's easy to do with a lot of bombast and a lot of cymbal crashes and a lot of first trumpet, but it's 20 minutes of some real musical challenges, and so we're enjoying working on that. And then after intermission, Bartok Concerto for Orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Bartok Concerto for Orchestra. Here's a piece that in a way proves the points of everything we've been talking about, because there's no one way to play it, and there shouldn't be if it's a great work and if it's joined as it has the large international repertoire. And yet, if we look at just the people that we know of who've played it here, Reiner, Schulte, Barenboim, Boulez, it requires an understanding of its structure, its intent, its instrumental variety. Its raison d'etre is that it's a concerto for orchestra. And yet, if you apply all of those things, you can come out with very different and, if not equally valid, ranging in equal validity.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
The point isn't, to go back to what you were saying very early on here, that you look like your mentor when you're on the podium or that you sound like a recording that you heard. It's that you can tap into that understanding, that spirit, that tremendous discipline that can eventually, in one's career, one hopes, lead to a certain freedom that enables interpretation.
Absolutely.
And I'm not envious of their having to practice 7-8 hours a day. I'm sorry, but I am envious of them having the experience to play a program that is just a great general program, but also has been so thought out to provide them with this range of experiences.
Exactly. The other thing that is, there are actually two other things that make the experience at DePaul one that I place tremendous value on. The first is that the faculty, string and non-string faculty at DePaul, are almost to a man and woman completely committed philosophically to the orchestra program,
mm-hmm.
and its importance and its relevance to the students' overall music education. This, of course, you know from your own experience, is an anomaly
right.
in American universities.
Right.
So that is a tremendous benefit to me to be able to have that kind of support from almost all the applied faculty and have them come to rehearsals. They're willing to, eager to come in their lessons, actually pull out an excerpt from the current repertoire and ask the student to play it and give mm-hmm. them fingering. I mean, this is again, in my experience, unusual mm-hmm. in academe. And then the second component of that is that the administration, the deans, the various deans of the music school, are also unabashedly committed to the orchestra as being the engine for the music school. And so there's tremendous support in all regards for a thriving orchestra culture. And you don't have that divisiveness among the administrators or the lack of interest among the faculty, which often hold orchestra programs back in academe.
And I think one can see this in the student body, at least those who are involved with the orchestra programs. I'm not an expert, and I don't know every single member of the orchestra, but I know quite a few of them or have known them over the years. And many schools will want an international student body because some of them are tuition paying and so on and so forth. But this is a program where people really have a deep commitment to their orchestral playing and also where they also read and write. I mean, they have ideas about music and ideas about life. And to come back to Boulez and Barenboim, these are not people who think that music should or even can exist in a vacuum. There's some great musicians and some great conductors who did live only with music. But I think Mr. Barenboim's model for a life in music, but it's a life too. And I think that's something that I get the impression DePaul is trying to give to its students.
You're absolutely correct. You're correct.
What's Cliff Colnott got coming up next season of any particularly unusual note or particularly excited about?
Well, I'm pleased and gratified that I will continue to be doing basically the same things that I've been doing in the last couple of years, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview. Those things remain on my plate. In addition to that, I have just finished an orchestration / arrangement for chamber orchestra, 22 players of Messiaen's work for piano and mezzo, Songs of the Earth and Sky.
Mm.
And that's going to have a world premiere next year. So that was a major.
Where's the world premiere going to be?
It'll be most likely in Chicago, and okay. It's not yet.
All right. Well,
clear.
When you know more, let us know so we can talk about that.
That's something new, and that I'm excited about that. And everything else remains pretty much status quo.
Well, but status quo for Cliff Colnott is very animated but also organized, very organized. And it's just been a great pleasure. And I hope now that we've we've gotten you here for an hour. We can do this more frequently because Cliff has so much to offer to musicians, budding musicians, and appreciators of music, and too often keeps himself out of the limelight. So it's been a great pleasure, and we'll go out with some music led by Cliff Colnett.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra, Civic Orchestra of Chicago, from the 2005-2006 season.
We want to thank Matt DeStefano for recording and producing this program and making it sound great. We want to thank Fran Huscher for nudging us to make sure that we did this. And thank you, Fran, always for your very well-placed and intended nudges. We want to thank our funders, Alphawood Foundation and Draupner LLC, a Chicago-based private equity firm, as well as other friends of this program. Let us know what you think of this or any of our other programs. Drop us a line at RENTAP, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P at AOL.com. I'm Andrew Patner, your host and producer for this series. We'll see you next week.